Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello, welcome everybody. This is Robert Forto. You're listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.5 in the Mat-Su Valley. Follow us online. Just search Mushing Radio in both Facebook and Twitter, and you can find us there anytime. You can also listen to our live stream on RadioFreePalmer.org, and all of our archived episodes can be found at MushingRadio.com. Sitting beside me is the co-host for Mushing Radio. It is Michelle Forto. Michelle, how's it going?
It's going well. I'm happy to say happy anniversary to you, as well as it's the 7th anniversary of Mushing Radio.
It is the 7th anniversary of Mushing Radio. We have covered the Iditarod in one form or another for the last 7 years. This year we decided we were not going to do our daily show. Typically we do it with the writer and director and producer of Mush the Movie, Alex Stein, living in Southern California. I know he had a busy schedule during Iditarod this year, and we were supposed to have a race, so we didn't plan on doing our nightly Iditarod coverage, but we canceled that race due to lack of snow, and I'm pretty glad we did, because we're in the middle of spring right now here in the Mat-Su Valley, aren't we?
We certainly are. A little bit of snow, a little bit of rain this morning, and a whole lot of ice.
Whole lot of ice, but you know what? Here in Palmer, there's not a lot of snow left on the ground, is there?
No, there really isn't. In fact, I'm really getting concerned about the trees that budded a little bit early. They might not make it this year.
And, you know, this year's Iditarod has been the big topic of conversation, has been the trail and lack of snow, starting pretty much as soon as the mushers got off the river and headed up towards Finger Lake and Rainy Pass. It got pretty dicey, and I'm sure everybody has read all of the reports and commentary that went back and forth over the last 9 or 10 days. So we're not going to delve into that a whole lot, but we're going to talk a lot tonight about the folks that are already in Nome and, of course, the 39 folks that are still out on the trail, including our current Red Lantern recipient, Elliot Anderson. He is on the trail past Unicolete along with a group of rookies. They're pretty much traveling together, and that's pretty typical for rookies in Iditarod. They form a pack, and obviously working together is much better than being out there all alone.
Absolutely, especially this year. You know, the trail reports have been sketchy from the start all the way to the finish, with reports of low snow, a lot of glare ice, and extreme winds.
Extreme winds, especially after the Unicolete checkpoint. It is typically a very windy area, notorious for very brutal conditions, especially from safety onwards. Safety is about 22, 25 miles from Nome, but this year that was a very pivotal checkpoint in Iditarod, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. But we want to talk a little bit about the folks that are already in Nome, starting, of course, with this year's winner, Dallas Seavey, came in 3:11, so Monday morning, at a time of 8 days, 13 hours, 4 minutes, and 19 seconds, shattering the current record set by, I believe it was his dad just a couple of years ago.
It was John Baker's record.
Oh, it was John Baker's record. I believe that was 3 years ago, so he totally shattered the current record. I remember last year Alex and I were on the air at 6-7 o'clock at night when the winner came in. So that gives a little perspective on how fast they were running this year compared to last. Second place, Ali Zirkel. Second place,
Before we go into second place, I find that pretty interesting considering the trail was so awful this year. And the fact that there was record-breaking times by both Dallas and our second-place holder, Ali Zirkel.
Well, the trail was bad in terms of lack of snow, but not bad in terms of speed. It was a very fast trail, and the dogs don't care. They don't care if they're running on dirt or snow or ice or what. their goal is to run as far and as fast as they possibly can. So the dogs didn't really care about the trail. It was the mushers that were having the problems. And as any musher will always say, the weakest link in any dog team is always the musher. And I tell you what, with all of the sled crashes and sleds just pretty much deteriorating on the trail, and of course many injuries to the mushers in terms of hurt knees and shoulders, a couple of broken legs, a broken foot, a concussion or two, lots and lots of
broken hand that was pretty grotesque. I saw the photos of it. You know, my thing is when is Iditarod going to give the mushers the option to have some dry land equipment out there?
Well, the way Iditarod sees it. Iditarod says if you sign up and we give you a trail, you should be able to run it. Now, of course, there'll be some doings with that. I'm sure in the off season, a lot of people will be talking. I'm sure a complaint or two will be filed. But remember, guys and gals, these folks signed up for the race, and they're all big boys and girls. So if they wanted to pull out because of the trail, they could have. But I'm sure most of them will say, and I wholeheartedly agree, I don't know if they necessarily knew what they were getting into.
Well, and I agree with that as well. And, you know, when you see veteran mushers like Jeff King get to safety and scratch, that really holds a lot of weight. He scratched for the safety of his dogs and the fact that the wind literally just ripped his equipment apart.
And that had absolutely nothing to do with the trail itself or Iditarod itself. That was a Mother Nature type thing, and a lot of folks dealt with that, including several folks that scratched, Nicholas Pettit, Kelly Maxiner, Hugh Neff, and of course Jeff King, all had real rough times in those windy conditions. But if we can get back to our standings, in second place, Ali Zirkel, and she is quoted in saying, how do you feel about second place? And she said, better than scratching. I think that's an interesting way to look at it, isn't it?
It is an interesting way to look at it, considering the way the question was posed at her when she responded. She got hunkered down there in safety for good reasons. She was going to wait the storm out a little bit longer with the winds and was enjoying her cup of coffee when Dallas blew right through. Somebody asked me today, what do you think about Dallas just going straight through safety, and why didn't he hunker down and wait out the storm? And my response to that was he was down to seven dogs, and I would imagine that those seven dogs were the seven best dogs he had and that they've experienced winds and conditions similar to this before.
For folks that are relatively new to mushing, and Iditarod in particular, when a person comes into a checkpoint, there's often not a lot of discussion there at the line. Your job is to sign in and out, and occasionally they will check for the mandatory gear, and you may drop a dog or two, but you're not finding out a whole lot of information at that time. Most of the time you're focused on getting on down the trail. Unless it's a mandatory checkpoint, you do not have to stop and wait, and safety was not. So Dallas and, of course, many others just signed in and out and were on their way. I believe Dallas was at safety only for 3 or 4 minutes, so he had no idea what was going on inside or necessarily outside. He was running his race, and he was going to make it to Nome. He had no idea at that point that he was in the lead or somebody was very close or within striking distance of passing him. He didn't know he was winning the race, at least from my understanding, until he pulled into the finish line there at the Broiled Arch in Nome.
That is correct. I watched the interview with Allie, and she corroborated the fact that he thought his dad was on his heels, and he was hell-bent to beat his dad.
Well, speaking of his dad, last year's winner was his dad. Mitch Seavey was the Iditarod winner in 2013, and, of course, 2012 was Dallas. So it has become a little bit of a Seavey dynasty in terms of Iditarod. But, you know, a lot of people ask this, especially folks that aren't old hats at the sport, so to speak. They'll say, how can these teams be so dominant so long, like Lance's 4 years in a row dynasty? And I'll often say that, you're only as good as your team of dogs, and typically a very strong team of dogs will be for 4, 5, 6 years. Then you have to raise a whole bunch of new puppies to equal where you were before. So often see these periods of time where one team is very dominant. Of course, with Allie Zirkel and SP Kennels, as they call it, Allie and Alan, they've been very dominant in the last few years in both the Yukon Quest and the Iditarod. And they're on that cycle right now. They're on that high of having a very dominant dog team in the last 4, 5, 6 years. And if they do it right, they can keep that going and that momentum going in their kennel. But puppies still have to be raised, and of course the older dogs have to be weaned out and retired to be replaced with those up and coming champions.
That's a good perspective, and I'm glad that you mentioned that, because you know. The armchair mushers, you know, you guys got to remember that the dog's optimal racing ages are typically between 2 and 6. And, you know, up until then, you've got all these chances to build the best team you possibly can. So, you know, if you've got half a team of 6-year-olds and the other half is 4 and 5-year-olds, chances are that's your last run with that team this year.
Well, that's going to be your dominant time with those dogs. And as we mentioned, those up-and-comers have to prove themselves and have to do very well and make the big boy team. And you know, that's why you'll often find the very dominant mushers will run puppy teams or B teams or yearling teams, whatever they're calling them. I know Martin Booser and Elliot Anderson are doing that. Elliot Anderson's taking his time running Martin's puppy team, and it's my understanding that he's running a very conservative schedule. He's running his time. Let's say it takes 10 hours to get from one checkpoint to another. His schedule is to rest for 2 hours longer than he ran, so he would rest in checkpoint for 12 hours, and he'll just hop skip from one checkpoint to another, making sure his puppies enjoy the trail and learn as they go. And as he was quoted, I believe Martin had quoted, they start out in kindergarten and they finish that Iditarod as high schoolers. So I think that's a good perspective on how to look at a puppy team coming up in Iditarod.
It is, and it should be noted that Elliot has raised and trained these puppies from the time they were born. So it's his team.
Yes, it is. So continuing on in the standings is the rest of the top 10. Number 4, Yor Olsom. He was the Rookie of the Year last year. Sonny Linder, the oldest person on the trail. Martin Booser in 6th. Jesse Royer is in 7th. Ray Reddington Jr. in 8th. Hans Gott in 9th. And Aaron Burmeister is in 10th. And so we have quite a field of very veteran mushers, of course, up in the top 10. But I tell you what, Yor Olsom, I know Alex and I talked about this year, last year. He's going to be one that's going to be reckoned with. I look forward to seeing how he progresses in the next several years. I believe he is a future Iditarod champion.
I do, too, and congratulations to a fellow Willowbilly. He is a neighbor of ours. But Jesse Royer, that's her best all-time finish to date.
Very cool. Definitely rooting for the ladies out there. I believe Abby West will claim Rookie of the Year this year. Where is she at in the standings here? Abby West has finished. She came in – oh, I'm sorry, I apologize. Nathan Schroeder, Rookie of the Year this year. Just behind Abby, Nathan Schroeder from Minnesota. So pretty seldom you'll see a rookie come up from the lower 48 and dominate like Nathan did. Top 17 finish, very good for him.
That is very good. That's very good for any first-timer on the Iditarod, let alone this trail condition.
So we had mentioned at the top of the show that Elliot Anderson was in Unicolit and on the trail. With him, pretty close, 4 hours difference in terms of rest, or 6 hours difference in terms of rest, is Monica Zappa, also a rookie, Lisbeth Norris, Marcel Frisino, Tommy Jorben-Dural, I believe is how you say that, and Yvonne Daybach, all traveling together, along with Alex Buto. Alex is one of Jake Berkowitz's puppy handlers, B-team runners, et cetera.
It should be noted that the little Anna Deer Siberians are kicking it right along.
They are. They're doing very well. Elizabeth is a friend of ours. She and her family run the local feed store where just about every musher in the Matsu Valley gets their kibble and meat. So she is a very well-known musher in terms of name when we talk about Alaska and Alaskan mushing, at least here in the Matsu Valley.
Yeah, and she's well-known in Norway as well, where she handled for quite some time for some mushers there.
She is. So let's talk a little bit about the scratches this year. We've had, I believe it is 19 scratchers to date, some very big names in terms of mushers that have scratched. Jeff King, Hugh Neff, Kelly Maxiner, Nicholas Pettit, Ramey Smith, Didi Genro, Jake Berkowitz, Scott Jansen, Mike Santos, Linwood Fielder, Karen Ramstead, Jim Lanier, all of those very big names in terms of Iditarod mushers. Everybody knows their names when we talk about them. It's interesting that there has been so many scratches so early in the race, and of course that had to do with the trail and how they were going through the burn. For folks that don't know about the burn, it is that section of trail from Roan to Nikolai. It is a very tough run. Some folks were doing it in 15 or 20 hours, and they were just finding their sleds disintegrating before their eyes because it was just so tough on the trails, and of course on the people as well, and lots of injuries. I know that Scott Jansen had broken his foot there very close to Roan, so just past that on the Dizelle Gorge. Jake Berkowitz, he had some real rough times out there, as well as Lev Schwartz. He had a rough time, and, of course, Cindy Abbott, the rookie that was running Vern Halter's team.
Yes, and Karen Ramstead has had a terrible end to her Iditarod career with her broken hand as well. She's the only musher that did not scratch. She was actually officially withdrawn.
Well, and, you know, she said on her Facebook page that she and the Iditarod Trail Committee made that decision together that she wanted to continue, but, of course, she could not care for her dogs and care for herself as she should. And, you know, heat of the moment, in the middle of the race, the adrenaline is pumping. I'm sure that many of mushers make that very difficult decision. Should I scratch? Should I wait it out? Should I let these folks withdraw me? It's a tough decision out there. I know I've sat out there many a times thinking, man, it's tough going out there. Should I scratch here? Should I turn back? Should I throw in the towel? It's a tough thing to have to say that we're done, to, you know, put that all that work, all of that time, all of that effort to say, you know what, we're done, because we often get blindsided out there and just aren't sure how we should proceed.
Right. Well, you can't mimic every condition that you will meet up with Mother Nature on the Iditarod Trail in your training runs, you know, around here. You'll be lucky if you hit the wind and willow.
That's exactly right. And, you know, what's interesting is there have not been a lot of talk this year about dog injuries. I don't believe we've had any dog deaths, thank goodness. We haven't had the dog drop debacle like we had last year in Unicalete. They fixed that on how they care for drop dogs. I think, by and large, all the dogs, they're enjoying themselves. It may be a little too warm at the early portions of the race, but, man, they're booking right down the trail. As we mentioned, the fastest time ever, and that goes into play when you have a very fast trail. Like we said, they don't necessarily care about how much snow is on the ground. As long as it's cool enough to run and they can giddy up and go, they're going to go.
That's right, and that's why I mentioned that we should be allowed to have some dry land equipment out there. I'm thinking some three-wheeled carts would have been a whole lot more fun on the burn.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about spot trackers and mushing, and I know that Iditarod went to a different system this year. It was the first year ever that they used the actual spot tracker devices, the little orange and black ones, and they tested it out on the Junior Iditarod a couple of weeks before. But boy, there has been a lot of discussion about the spot trackers, not only the ability to follow them, but how they're used. I believe with that option this year, being able to push the button has really changed the race, and I know many people have their opinions about whether they should have that ability. I know Sonny Linder said that he would absolutely not, under any circumstance, push that button, but there's been several out there where they've literally had their lives saved because of the button, which was the first year ever that they had that, that assurance to be able to summon rescue help. And for folks that did not listen to that show, or if they did, remember, if you press that button, almost always your race is over at that point.
That's correct. And you know, I think that having that level of safety is a good idea, but at the same time, I'm in agreement with Sonny Linder. You're out on this trail. You're not a kid. I think the kids should have these for sure. But if you're out on that Iditarod Trail, it's not just about who makes it to Nome the fastest. Sonny has been running Iditarod for, unfortunately, as long as you and I have been alive. But he has been a participant that knows that this is about survival. It's not just about who gets there the fastest. And I think that for some of us, mushers that have been fans of Iditarod for so many years, we're starting to really recognize that it's no longer about the race with Mother Nature and the survivalism of it. It's no longer a skill to run this race as far as being able to camp and survive and know that there may not be help out there.
I disagree with that. It's still definitely one of the toughest tests in the world to be able to run this race, and whether you have the assurance of a spot tracker or not, you're still out there all alone. And I guarantee if Les Schwartz was sitting here with us right now, he would say, you know what, you're absolutely wrong about that. I was out there for 20 hours and I thought I was all alone, and you know what, that spot tracker had the ability to summon that help. I know Hugh Neff, good friend of ours, also the host of Gypsy Musher, he was out there on the sea ice, pretty much hunkered down in 45-mile-an-hour winds. He just couldn't go any further, and he started pushing his button, and it was malfunctioning. He had no idea, and he sat there, and he sat there, and he sat there, and he pushed the button, and he pushed the button, and he pushed the button, and nobody came. Eventually, they sent out a welfare check. A man on a snow machine went out and found Hugh. And I guess he had told him that he had been pressing the button for hours. And you know, and we know Hugh very well. He's one of the toughest mushers out there. He pretty much will do whatever it takes to be able to go out there and run his dogs. For a guy like that to realize that he has to push the button, that's saying something about the conditions out there and the ability to proceed. Again, nothing necessarily on Iditarod. It was just that crazy weather and Mother Nature ringing everybody's bell out there.
Absolutely, and that's kind of where I was going with this, is that, you know, like Hugh, he experienced a bad situation where his button didn't work. Lev was pushing his button, and it took them a lot longer than it should have, and a lot of people's opinion, to get to him. He was waving down the airplanes that were flying over, checking on the mushers on the trail. And there's a few blogs out there that I've read, too, that the snow machiners that are out there as support, as to be out there checking on mushers and things, they were having problems as well. So, I mean, what do? You have to be able to survive out there.
That's right. And Lev will say that that, you know, he was perfectly fine out there. He had enough food for his dogs. He had enough food for himself. So it was not necessarily a dire situation for him. It wasn't too hot. It wasn't too cold. He was doing fine. He was just waiting for help to arrive. He couldn't go any further because his sled was just so trashed, as well as with Jake Berkowitz, who I believe had to push the button because he just couldn't proceed. And, you know, you can't make it down the trail if you don't have any runners left on your sled. You can't push necessarily a 100-pound sack down the trail and be able to make it for 50 or 60 miles. You have to have those runners, and if there's not any snow or if there's not necessarily a trail at all, it's tough to do. You pretty much have to throw in the towel and be able to be able to scratch and, you know, collect your thoughts and go about the business.
That's right. You know, for everybody out there, imagine what it's like when you walk your lab down the street and your arm's being pulled off. Multiply that by 12 or 14 dogs on ice and with no equipment to hold them back, and you'll understand why a lot of these mushers that ended up with their sleds in pieces really had to make that tough decision and scratch.
You did. So definitely don't want to focus only on the scratches this year. There were quite a few. It is not a record by any stretch of the imagination. In years past, there have been times where up to 40, 45% of the mushers in the field have scratched. So it is not a record number by any stretch of the imagination, but there is quite a few, as we mentioned, quite a few very well-known names that have scratched. But as we continue, we still have several days of mushing to go. The banquet is on Sunday in Nome, and for the last several years, all of the mushers have been in and been able to attend to the banquet. In years past, several years ago, they used to have a second banquet for that group of later mushers that would come in after that first banquet. But for the last several years, everybody's running such a fast race that most will make it in time to attend the banquet on Sunday evening, and most, just about everybody, should be home from Nome Monday or Tuesday at the latest.
Yeah, and you know, there's been a lot of recognition needs to be given to those mushers still hanging on. You know, they're running their races. These rookies need all the congratulations and that they deserve and have earned. They've made it through the rough parts. They've got some rough patches ahead of them. And if they just keep going low and slow like they have, they'll be just fine.
That's right. I believe there's about 225, 230 miles from Unalakleet to Nome. There's still a lot of racing to go. That's still at least 3.5, 4 days left. And you still have to deal with all of that dreaded sea ice and all of that occurs. So,
or lack thereof. Allie said that she was being blown out to sea and there was no ice.
Yeah, so that's a difficult situation, and we do have a heck of a lot of rookies still out there, about nine from what I see, pretty much traveling, 10 traveling within a day or two of each other.
And there were about a dozen rookies this year, a large rookie field.
There was a very large rookie field, also including a lot of rookies from other parts of the world. As we mentioned, Sweden and Norway, we also have rookies from pretty much all over the world this year. There's not a huge Alaska contingent in terms of rookies, and I know Lisbeth Norris said that they should have had interpreters at the rookie meetings this year because there were so many different nationalities at the rookie meetings. So I think that's great. I think that there's good recognition for that Iditarod as a worldwide sport, and as long as we can continue that and as long as we don't have any issues, we'll be able to keep this race going for very far into the future. Michelle, we're about out of time. One last thing.
I would like to mention Newton Marshall and his heroic efforts at this race.
Yeah, he's doing some remarkable stuff out there. He helped out Scott Jansen out on the trail. There's a picture of him.
He's helped out more than just Scott Jansen. There's quite a few pictures of him helping other mushers as well.
Yeah, so Newton, he's working his way down the trail. And you know what's interesting? I read about this just yesterday, and I know we're running out of time, is he wasn't able to attend school much as a child. You know, living and growing up in Jamaica, they don't have the educational system like we have here. He's actually learning how to read, too.
As an adult.
So he's taking on that task, which I'm sure is almost as a monumental task as running the Iditarod. So, you know, Newton and I, we've talked several times. He's been on this show a couple of times. A great guy. I think if he does finish, he should definitely be in contention for that sportsman on the trail. He's doing what he does out there, and anybody that knows Newton Marshall will say he's one of the nicest mushers out there and doing relatively well. He, like I said, he's traveling with that pack of rookies. He's currently in 43rd place, so he's making his way down the trail. He is currently in Shaktulik, so he's getting ready to hit that sea ice before you know it. And
now, is this his third run at the Iditarod?
I believe third or fourth. I know he scratched at least one time a year. I think he scratched last year, but he has finished the Iditarod at least once. I believe he was running with Lance Mackey at that time.
I believe so.
So, guys, we're just about out of time. If you have any comments, questions, or concerns, head on over to our Facebook page, Mushing Radio, or Mushing Radio on Twitter. We're going to talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.